people out there will help you, but you have to want to receive help.
My name is Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy.
This is Zee Holly in for Esprit Devora, and I'm really excited to have Sky Kelly from Avasar here today. We met, gosh, not that long ago, probably about a month ago at a conference.
Recent.
And man, we just like connected. What you're doing is just so important, really focusing on B2B instead of sort of more the common areas that you hear about in tech. So I'm very excited to have you here to sort of shed some light on this.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
If you would, just tell a little bit about yourself and what your name, the company, the role that you have.
Yes, I am Sky Kelly. I'm CEO and founder of Avasar. We are an online business-to-business marketplace helping small to mid-sized businesses get contracts to work with large corporations and government entities, and really helping small to mid-sized businesses connect with each other for joint ventures or partnerships or just to hire each other.
So what does your company mean to you? Why is it important to you?
So Avasar actually comes from the Italian avvisare, which means making people aware. And that's what we're doing. We're trying to make people aware of the opportunities that exist to grow their business. You know, it's really important for me and for the company to level the playing field of how you break in to the B2B space and how you really grow a successful company. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to funnel the right resources and the right opportunity and the right education to small to mid-sized businesses, with a special emphasis on minority, women, veteran, and LGBT-owned businesses who quite often have more difficulties in getting things like access to capital and access to contracts.
And you're really benefiting both sides, not only the folks, not only just providing those opportunities for those women and minority-owned businesses, but also on the corporate side, because they're looking for more diversity in their pipeline, right?
They absolutely are looking for more diversity in their pipeline, not just because there are government mandates to subcontract with a certain percentage of diverse businesses, but also because diversity in the supply chain is just good business. On average, it reduces your operating costs by 20%.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Because, again, these diverse businesses are usually much more competitive in their offering. They're able to be more nimble because they, quite frankly, just have to do more with less. Mm-hmm. They don't have that same level of access to capital as non-diverse businesses do. So studies have shown over and over again, when you put more diversity in the supply chain, it actually reduces your costs.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Without reducing any of the quality. And that's a big misnomer.
Wow, that's amazing. When did you start the company?
I started the company in early 2015, doing a lot of research, putting up an alpha platform, studying and learning, and just really trying to make sure that we honed in on the right experience. And we started working on the beta platform in September of 2015, so just over a year ago now. And I'm just so excited and so amazed at how much we've been able to accomplish in a really short amount of time.
When did you become interested in tech in the first place?
Ooh, well, my first coding class was actually in high school, my senior year of high school. I went to an all-girls school.
Oh, you did too?
I did, yeah. All-girl private school. We had 50 girls and pretty much the same 50 girls since sixth grade, since I was 10 that we graduated.
And what did you think about going to an all-girls school? Was that a good or bad thing?
Well, when I was 10, it was great. I was like, oh, there are no boys there to distract us and make the teachers upset. This is amazing. Later on, it became a little bit more of a Crampton style. But at the time, I loved it. And so senior year of high school, I had my first coding class, and we were learning C++ at the time, and we built a little mini website. And as I look back on it now, I'm like, this was the most ridiculous and horrible thing that I could have ever created. But you couldn't tell me that this wasn't the best website of the entire World Wide Web at the time. I had neon lights for my header.
Oh,
and
my,
my pièce de résistance was a dancing baby. That I had. So I was just, I was on fire with my dancing baby. So that was actually my first introduction to coding and to programming.
What would you say if you kind of look back on how your career has taken you? I mean, I'd love to hear a little bit about how you ended up where you are now. Because I know that you've been a product manager, right? Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Well, it was a sort of a long, winding road to get there. So I went to school at UNC Chapel Hill, and I went there because I always wanted to study entrepreneurship and to study how you create and build a successful business. At the time, there were lots of business books around about mid-sized businesses and how you grow those, or big corporations, but there was not a lot of literature on just starting. Right? Starting and getting to a certain point. So I went to UNC, studied that, created my own major and studied entrepreneurship. And that was the time that I was still sort of coding and programming on my own, but I got more into the business side of things. So I actually started my career working on Wall Street after college, because that was another way that I knew to learn about businesses. Mm-hmm. Everyone needs to make money, right? And once you get to a certain stage, you know, you're usually IPOing, and how the stock price affects your business and everything else. So I started there.
But Wall Street's not, I mean, that's like the polar opposite of entrepreneurship, right?
Completely, which I did not know until I got there, right? Completely different. Although I did start new products and selling sort of new components while I was there. So it was a little bit quasi-entrepreneurial, as you could say. But then I really quickly moved over to technical sales. So I was selling our technology trading platform, and that's what brought me back into the technology world. After that, I said, all right, this is enough. This is definitely not the entrepreneurship world that I want to be in. So I actually went from Wall Street to working for a very small startup company in New York that no one had heard of right before the recession. So that was a great experience, because it taught me a lot about getting your hands dirty in a startup. And then in a cooperation with the CEO and founder of that company, we started a separate tech startup. So it was in the digital out-of-home space. We had television screens in the waiting rooms of doctors' offices, and we sold all closed content. So that was my first experience getting into more, getting away from just doing one specific job to doing multiple jobs, and really understanding where is the company going and what is that vision that we're trying to sell, and doing the sales and doing the marketing and understanding the pricing models and everything else. So because I had had that experience, which failed, by the way, after that, I was hired by AT&T to be their director of emerging media and business development. But that was my first, and that was the title, because we didn't really know what it was back then. But that was really my first product management role. Mm-hmm. I had the online behavioral targeting product and the mobile advertising product, and it was my job to just make it better. That was literally what they said. Just like, make it better. Just figure it out.
I love that you had a product management role, though, because so few people even know what a product manager does. But it's probably the best path to figuring out how to be an entrepreneur yourself.
It is the best path. I tell that for everyone. First of all, learn on someone else's dime. And second of all, that role get you experience, hands-on experience with so many different parts of a company, and understanding how to grow a product, that it is the best path
Explain
to becoming
what
an entrepreneur.
That role is. So a lot of people haven't heard of it.
Right. So as a product manager, it is your job to own not only the product vision, but also the product strategy. So you are owning everything from how do we launch the product, to what does that entail? What are the operations around it, to how do we sell it, right? What is that pitch? What is that strategy? To what does the actual product do? What are the features and functionality? What's the user experience? To going on sales calls with salespeople, to owning the P&L. I mean, that was the first thing I had to do at AT&T was I owned the P&L, and I had to assess where we were and how to get us to a higher margin, right? And that just involved everything, taking this holistic look at the product. So
you're like a mini CEO of that product.
That is exactly right. Yes, as a product manager, you are the mini CEO. That's the best way to put it. And it was such a fantastic experience. And I loved it. Right? Yeah. I just really gravitated towards it because I had the programming background to be able to talk to the dev team and the engineers about how we wanted to grow it in the right way. You know, I had that sales experience so I could talk with sales and make sure they're comfortable. And a lot of what you do is just being a translator for everyone and sort of a counselor.
Yeah.
listening to everyone's problems, but really figuring out just how do you take a product from wherever you are, even if it's at the starting point, to growing it.
So if you look back on where you've been and where you see you're going, what would you say your calling is?
My calling is really to figure out how to get from where they are to where they want to go.
That's pretty broad.
It is pretty broad, but I think there are a couple of different ways that I've at least done that. And one is just helping people figure out on their life journey, right, from a career perspective, what is it that they really want to do? I was just talking to someone earlier about this, and sometimes you think that you hear a role and you think that that would be great for you, but it's more than just the role having to sound good. It's really, does it coalesce with what it is that you want to do with your life, right? Mm-hmm. Does it fit into how you want your day-to-day to be? Does it play to your strengths? And a lot of times, people aren't really sure about that because they don't have that experience of that role, or they think that this is what it should be versus this is what it is. And so I'm doing that now just in a different capacity, which is really helping people who have already identified that they want to start and grow this business. How do they get from point A to point B?
And you're really helping enable them to do that and to connect in with whether, you know, big companies or vice versa.
Exactly. So it's very
customers,
rewarding.
Suppliers, they're all critical to your business.
Exactly.
So how did you know that was your calling? That's like, how have you decided that's what you want to be doing?
It's just something that I naturally always wanted to do. You know, mm-hmm. I think your calling is something that you would do without getting paid for. And I always did it and never got paid for it before. People always came to me for advice and guidance and just being someone that can be completely realistic and non-judgmental. I always say, and I tell my team, that we're meeting our users where they are, right? And I meet people where they are, wherever it is that they are. Maybe they think they should know more than they do, but they don't. They think they should be at a different place in their career, but they're not. They think that their business should be at a higher level, but it's not. You can just be completely honest. And wherever you are, I'm going to try and help you get to that next level if I can.
Mm-hmm. How did you go about taking action to develop that calling to date?
Yes. So in true agile methodology fashion, I just started in small increments. And I think that's what really 2015 was all about for us. And for me specifically was, do I have a business here? Is this something that could work for a lot of people? So starting off with a really simple, very basic platform. And even before that, I think a part of being a good product manager is just all that preparation and work that comes before you even start to do a mock-up or start to talk to an engineer about what it is that you want. You really have to define it. So just, again, talking to people, understanding what it is that they needed, figuring out what are the opportunities that pretty much everyone needs to know, right? When you're starting or growing a business. And then seeing if that would actually help people get from point A to point B. That's what we started. And then just growing from there, adding on something, understanding that, oh, okay, well, all small businesses, you know, need to find out what opportunities exist across the board, and they don't want to register on a million different platforms from all these different corporations and get all the opportunities from them. They just really want to find out which opportunities are great for them in one central place. Just start from there and grow.
So you're supporting a lot of entrepreneurs and companies, helping them. Have you had mentors yourself that have helped you?
I've been fortunate enough to have so many great mentors in my career, and really just being able to seek out the right people. I know I would not be where I am today without the great mentors that I've had, and that's why I try and pay it forward and try to be a mentor to people who want to reach out to me as well.
Who has been one of your most memorable mentors?
Yes. So the woman who I worked for at UBS Investment Bank on Wall Street. She was an amazing mentor for me, not only because she was just fierce to be a senior level woman on Wall Street at the time, or really any time, you have to be tough, and she was tough as nails, but she also had a real kindness to her and a real understanding and empathy. And I think that's something that I learned a lot from her, is just to empathize with people because she was very different from me. She is a short Irish blonde haired woman and I am a tall black female. And we grew up in different upbringings. And of course, like, I started on Wall Street not knowing anything. And she had been there for a couple decades. But she always guided me towards just how to be a good professional in general, and how to start your career off on a positive note, and how to find out what it is that you want and go after it.
So how do you start your career on a positive note?
Well, she said within your first 60 days, you need to do something that makes you indispensable to people right away. And so she said, this is a project that I'm going to have you start on, and this is something that's going to help everyone in our team. And it was taking different contracts that we had at the time, not to bore you guys with the details, but using the Bloomberg terminal to create this Excel spreadsheet that automatically calculated all the different contracts with foreign exchange that all of our salespeople needed. Wow. Right. So I did that within the first 60 days, and she was right. I had people from all across the globe emailing me immediately saying, this is amazing. Thank you so much. Can you change this, or can you add this, or this would be more helpful? And automatically I was known within my first 60 days.
Why did she give you that opportunity?
I think because she saw a lot of potential in me, and she knew that I was someone who wanted the coaching and wanted the mentoring and wanted to listen. And that's another big thing that I tell a lot of people. It's like, people out there will help you, but you have to want to receive help and be good at that. And so she knew that I was someone who said, listen, tell me, I don't know how to make it here. I got here, but I want to be successful. So whatever you have, whatever guidance you want to give me, and
that's
I will
so
listen.
That's so true. It's so true that you're more likely to want to help somebody. You know, if somebody wants help and they're actually doing, they're listening and they're applying what you're suggesting.
Exactly.
It's very rewarding.
It's extremely rewarding for people. So just make it easy, right? Just listen to them and do what they tell you.
How do you overcome challenges?
I think one of the best lessons that I was able to learn early on is just, I've been fortunate enough to have a lot of challenges and have to get over them, right? Have to overcome them. So when you learn that in an early age, it just becomes par for the course. It's like, oh, okay, another challenge. Here we go. I can do it. It's nothing. But I've seen some of even my friends who didn't have those experiences straight out of college. They didn't have those experiences in their early 20s. And so when they get into their early 30s and they're now suddenly having this big obstacle, they're like, I don't know what to do.
Right. And I think when you're told growing up, you could do anything you put your mind to, but you're not actually forced to go through the struggles, it's a lot harder.
It is a lot harder.
And you only hear the positive stories. You hear about people who've succeeded and how they knew all along what they're doing. They're so smart.
It's so fun. I love hearing those stories because I'm like, who are those people? I don't know any people who just knew from the beginning, like, this is exactly what I wanted to do. And I had this straight linear path, and this is how I got there. Because every story that I come across, including my own, has been this long, winding road with lots of ups and downs and going backwards sometimes to go forwards and everything else. So it's been really interesting.
That's what I love. I love hearing the stories in the thick of it, right? Like my podcast, The Art of Manufacturing, we do that too, like talking to people that are going through the struggles right now. Like, what are you struggling with right now?
Do you have another hour?
Pick one thing. What's the biggest challenge?
My biggest challenge right now is being able to succinctly tell our story to the right audience. And marketing is so important, right? Like, if I have 20 minutes to talk to someone, of course they're going to get what it is we do, and they're going to get the value, and they're going to be excited about it. But how do I do that in 30 seconds or less? How do I do that in a one-page flyer? So finding the right people, I think, to be able to help with that is really important. And finding talent in general is always something that you have to focus on as an entrepreneur, but it's not easy. It's not like great people fall from the sky into your lap and says, hey, I want to work for you. So
do you think that when you were on Wall Street and then you pivoted and you ended up going to the Strip, do you think that was probably the biggest inflection point in your career? Or when was the time that you kind of really realized, oh my God, I'm on the wrong path here?
No, that was definitely the biggest inflection point. That was definitely the biggest one. Because at that point, up until that point, I had always had my life plan, right? I always had like what I'm going to do in the next 5 years and what the next 10 years is going to look like. And I think when I was a freshman in college, I started going to grad school information sessions just because I wanted to be prepared and just have all of that laid out. And when I left Wall Street, I left knowing that I didn't have another job lined up. I didn't know what I was going to do. At the time, I was actually living in London, so I had to pack up and move back to New York.
Wow.
And just had no idea what the next phase of my life was going to be. And oddly enough, it felt really just fulfilling not to have that plan, just to be able to take a breath and say, I'm going to go wherever life takes me. Was completely new for me, but it was great. And I've just learned since then that it's really hard to map out and plan out where you go in life. You just got to be open to the different opportunities that come.
I think we so often try to impress on young people that whatever, like I said before, whatever you set your mind to, you can achieve, right? But that you have to have a passion and follow down that path. But then if you're planning things out, you're missing all these other opportunities.
You're missing a lot of opportunities. It's good to have a general direction of where you want to go.
Yeah.
I don't want to tell people that you shouldn't, but just know, just don't be a stickler for it, right? Just don't say at all costs, this is what I'm going to do. Forget everything else. Just you have to be open to different great opportunities that are going to come your way if you're open to it.
Do you regret having spent time on Wall Street and like the time, because, time spent on something that wasn't your current calling?
Absolutely not. No, it was an incredible experience. You talk about learning quickly and overcoming obstacles and just knowing that you can handle anything. Mm-hmm. That was a sink or swim experience, right? Even in your first 6 weeks, it was like learning a completely new language, right? And I don't know if everyone knows this, but Wall Streeters aren't the most friendly and warm people. So it's not like people are sitting you down and taking all this time and saying, no, let me explain to you what just happened in that trade. It was either you picked up by osmosis and you learned it or you didn't. So after having that experience, I knew that I could now learn anything. It was just a matter of and be pretty good at anything. It was just a matter of what it is that I wanted to do next and where I wanted to take my career. So no, I don't regret that at all. I'm actually really appreciative for that experience.
Well, and sometimes the failure, I think we have failure all wrong. It's not really about the learning from the failure. It's more like you're saying, the confidence of having survived it.
Yes. Yes. Just surviving it and knowing that
I'm
survive.
I'm still here. I'm
exactly.
Not dead yet.
Knowing that you will survive, which makes you more open to take risks in your life.
Yeah. That's super important. What have you learned about yourself through pursuing your dream?
I think you learn so much about yourself at all points. Like the things that I learned about myself with my first startup are different than the things I'm learning about myself right now. Right now, what I'm learning is that I feel and operate best in an environment where people naturally feel that what they're doing plays a part into their life. I don't want to give anyone a hard sell and say, oh, this person is great. Like at all costs, you have to come on board because it's the right thing for the business and for me, right? I want it to feel good for both people. So I always ask people who are interviewing or thinking about working with Avisar, what are your life goals? What is it that you want to do? Where do you see yourself? And you might not know, and that's fine. But if I know long-term where you want to be, I can sort of figure out if this works into that or not, if it's going to help you get there or if it won't. And if it doesn't help you get there, then you're not going to be as happy working with Avisar. You're going to be looking at doing other things or always on the hunt for your next opportunity. So I don't want that, right?
I know.
I mean, we're starting businesses because we want to create the environment that we mostly didn't have in other circumstances and at other jobs. So I want to create an environment where people generally are happy and want to be doing what it is that we're doing because we have a big mission and we have a lot to do.
It's not worth trying to twist arms.
It's not worth it trying to twist arms. Exactly, Z.
I think when I was younger, I thought, I'm so good at twisting arms. I'm like, wait, why is that a good thing?
Exactly. That's not a good thing. Yeah. That is not a good thing. And so I'm just learning that I don't want to do that, right? Even if you tell me that this is definitely going to put the business on a great trajectory, that's just not what I want.
What's next for you?
World domination. What's next for us is really, we have a great foundation with Avisar, and I'm just excited to be able to take it to a $10 million business, right? Take it to that next tranche and then see where we go from there. And I always tell people, I don't know if I'm going to be with Avisar for the rest of the life of Avisar. Hopefully it's going to be a very, very long period, mm-hmm. right? And I might not be the right person to take it from 10 million to 100 million or 100 million to a billion. But I can tell you that I'm absolutely the right person to grow this thing right now.
That's a great way of looking at it, too. And I think as an investor, I would be very encouraged to hear the CEO say that.
So all investors who are listening, just note that.
What woman in tech inspires you?
I think like a lot of us, Sheryl Sandberg is a very inspirational figure. And I know a lot of people say that, well, she didn't have the same experiences as everyone else. She was very fortunate to have this great background. But I think just having the courage to stand up and talk about women's issues in the workplace and growing your career and understanding that it is different for women is huge. Because if you think 20, 30 years ago, women just didn't do that. So I think she is a very inspirational figure.
Quick fire round. Are you ready?
No.
It'll be painless.
Oh, okay.
All right. Favorite book?
Memoirs of a Geisha.
Oh. Favorite podcast or video series? nice answer.
I also like the Startup podcast.
Startup Nice. Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. Best resource for tech?
I will say General Assembly is one. I will say Make in LA for hardware is another.
Yay.
Yeah, I'll leave it at those two, but there are lots more.
There are so many.
Yeah.
Your hobby?
Gymnastics.
Really? Still, you do gymnastics?
Well, not still. Yeah. I actually started as an adult.
That's great.
Yeah, so I love gymnastics. And no, I don't think I'm going to be an Olympic gold medalist, but I love doing it.
Very inspiring. Okay, so how can people stay in touch?
You can always reach me at avisar.com, at info@avisar.com. or go into the avisar.com website. We are on Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook. There are lots of different ways that people can stay in touch.
Amazing. I'm really inspired by your story. I think that you've had a fascinating path with a lot of great experience. And I love how you're focusing on a sort of underrepresented area for tech startups, the B2B marketplace. So, and it's doing really important work.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, what most people don't know is that the B2B space is actually five times the size of the B2C space. So it is underrepresented in tech, but it's a huge market, a huge opportunity.
So if you're thinking about starting a company, you haven't done one yet, that's an area to look at.
Come to avisar.com and learn all about it.
And if you have a company, then go and list your company.
Exactly. Come create a supplier profile on avisar.com.
Awesome. Just really, really great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me, Z. I really enjoyed this.
Okay, everyone out there, to connect with other amazing women entrepreneurs like Sky and all these other folks that you hear from, go to womenintechvip.com. And if you love hearing from inspiring entrepreneurs and you're interested in the hardware space, things like food, fashion, consumer products, you might want to check out my podcast too, The Art of Manufacturing. It's a behind-the-scenes look at how entrepreneurs who make stuff are trying to make it in their industries. Search for The Art of Manufacturing on your favorite podcast player or go to makeitinla.org/listen. This is Zee Holly in for Esprit Devora. Thanks for listening to Women in Tech.
This episode of the Women in Tech Show is powered by UpGuard. UpGuard's discovery engine brings visibility to complex IT environments, enabling teams to quickly identify risk, confirm compliance, and make business safer. They are proud supporters and employers of incredible women in tech. To be notified every time a new Women in Tech episode is released, simply text Women in Tech to 310-872-2423. That's 310-872-2423. To support the Women in Tech Show, it's super easy. All you need to do is start doing your Amazon shopping by clicking on this link first, womenintechshow.com/Amazon. That's womenintechshow.com/Amazon. The Women in Tech Show is hosted by Esprit Devora, edited by MKW Films, show notes provided by Carl Marty, music by Jay Huffman Live. The Women in Tech Show is a WeAreTech.fm production.